Whenever you have a problem with somebody, whenever you feel like somebody has had their feelings hurt, or there's been a misunderstanding, or there's some sort of internal conflict or drama, don't talk about them. Don't go to other people. Don't send them an email. Either call them on the phone or go directly to them face to face. And we just call this in the 13 behaviors, confronting reality. You have to confront reality. And I think that is a very, very big thing that great leaders do. They don't shove it under the rug. They go right to the person as soon as they know it's happened. And they just say, listen, I'm hearing some things and I'm feeling some things. Could I just come right to you, and you and I just, let's just close the door. Let's just create an environment. There's no TV on. There's no background noise. It's just you and me.
Welcome, everybody, to the Change Starts Here podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Odom, and I am excited you've joined us today as we continue to dive in to a topic that's core to everything that we do as leaders and the culture we build, to the relationships that we are responsible for. And that's the topic of trust. If you've been following along the recent episodes, you'll know that we've been taking a deep dive into our Speed of Trust content. Today, we're going to zero in on the character part of trust. There's competence and there's character. So today is focused on character. And within that, we'll focus on two of the four cores of credibility, which are intent and integrity. So now, I don't need to tell you all that trust is critical in education. Whether you're leading a district, a school, or a classroom, without trust, everything grinds to a halt. Trust impacts culture. It impacts innovation. And ultimately, it impacts how well we serve our students. So today's discussion isn't just theory. It's about actionable behaviors that we can all apply right now to lead better and build more authentic relationships. So let's start with intent. We view intent as our motive or agenda. Intent is about whether people truly believe we're acting in their best interest. You know, as educational leaders, our intent has to be crystal clear. Are we here for the kids, the staff, the community, or is our focus elsewhere? People can sense if we're truly invested in their success more than our success, or in that case, if we have hidden agendas. When your teachers, staff, and students sense that you're there for them, it creates an atmosphere where trust can flourish. But, and I'm sure you guys have experienced this before, if they feel you're prioritizing metrics over their well-being, trust erodes. And it's not something that happens all at once. It actually can deteriorate little by little and conversation by conversation. So how do we make sure our intent is clear? And for me, and this is one that I've worked on mastering, and I feel like some weeks I feel really strong in this, and other weeks maybe not, or in some relationships I feel really strong in this area, and other relationships not. So I'm curious if you identify with that. It starts with talking straight. And that's our first trust behavior. Talk straight is exactly what it sounds. It's being direct and transparent with your communication. I'm not talking about being blunt to the point of insensitivity. I'm talking about being clear, truthful, and avoiding spin. In education, this is critical because we get mixed messages that can confuse or frustrate your team. For example, let's say a new policy is rolling out to change the way teachers engage with their students. You could try to cushion the blow or dance around the reality of it, but that's where distrust begins to creep in. Or you can talk straight. Be upfront about the changes, explain the rationale, and acknowledge any challenges. When you talk straight, you invite trust into the conversations because people know exactly where you stand. Next, let's move to integrity. Integrity is about walking your talk. It's how you live out the values you believe in consistently. This is huge for leaders because your team is always watching to see if your actions align with your words. And from my opinion, your actions align with your vision and mission. Are you living the values that you promote? Let me be clear. Integrity, and it's something that we hear often, integrity isn't about being perfect, but it is about being accountable. When we fall short, and we all do, the question is, how do we handle it? Do we sweep it under the rug, or do we own up to it? Which brings us to our second behavior, right wrongs. We all make mistakes. That is okay. All of us make mistakes. But the most important thing we can do as a leader is to right wrongs. When we mess up, whether it's a decision that negatively impacts teachers, a conversation that didn't land well, or an oversight, we need to own it and take steps to correct it. Think about how much trust you build when you're willing to admit, you know what? I got that wrong. Let me make it right. It shows humility, commitment to integrity, and you know what? People are willing to, most times, willing to extend grace when they see you trying to right wrongs. In my opinion, and it's been my experience time and time again, when you right wrongs and do it the right way, it actually strengthens trust because people see that you're real, you're not a robot, and you don't assume that they're going to be perfect as well. The next behavior that we get to is demonstrating respect. In education, this is non-negotiable. Respect is the foundation of any relationship, but it's especially important when we're leading teams. You're not just working with numbers. You're working with people who bring their own experiences, expertise, and emotions to the table. When you demonstrate respect, you value others' contributions, whether that's a teacher's input on a new initiative or a student's perspective on their own learning journey. It's all about listening actively. As a leader, we may have the final to say on decisions, but the process of getting there should always involve demonstrating respect for others' voices. This helps your teams feel heard, seen, and most importantly, valued. And that's what builds trust. Another critical behavior, which is one that I think we should fight for in everything we do, is creating transparency. Transparency is about openness. It's about not hiding the ball. When people feel like they have the full picture, even when it's uncomfortable, they trust the process more. I'm going to say that again just because that's something that hits me hard. When people feel like they have the full picture, even when it's uncomfortable, they trust the process more. In education, where change can happen frequently, whether it's new policies, budget cuts, or curriculum shifts, creating transparency is critical. When you create transparency, you're giving your team the ability to fully understand why decisions are made, what's expected, and where things are headed. This doesn't mean you share every detail about every decision, but it does mean that you're clear about your reasoning and that you're trying to avoid surprises. It's about fostering a culture where no one has to second guess what's happening because they trust that they're getting the full picture. Finally, let's talk about showing loyalty. Loyalty in our framework isn't just about defending your team when they're under attack. It's about speaking positively about people, even when they're not in the room. I don't mean to continue to go back, but I need everyone to let this sink in. It's not about defending your team when they're under attack. It's important, right? So it isn't just about that. It is about that, but it's not just about that. It's about speaking positively about people, even when they're not in their room. This can be as simple as acknowledging a teacher's hard work in a meeting or defending a student's potential in a tough conversation. But it's also about refusing to engage in or allow negative backroom talk. When people see that you're loyal and you'll stand up for them and have their back, even when they're not around, their trust in you grows exponentially. Think about that. Just go back in the time where you felt like you've either worked for a leader, have been working with a leader or a group of people where you know they do not have negative backroom talk. They're not talking about you behind their back ever. When you feel like you're in a place where people are in the light and not talking about you all the time, they're not there, they're actually lifting you up, the amount of confidence, the amount of joy that enters your heart is exponential. And that's what we're trying to do. So as we wrap up today, and before we get to, just as a reminder, this series, we have a special guest at the second part of every episode. And this guest this week is a friend of mine named Lonnie Moore, who has been with Franklin Covey for 25 years. He is a master upon master of this content, as well as many other contents. And so the interview I have after this is going to be great. But before that, as we wrap up, I just want to challenge you with this. How are you building trust within your teams? How are you building trust within your schools or within your district? Are you intentional about your communication? Are you intentional about your respect? And are you intentional about your transparency? When people look at your leadership, do they see someone who walks with integrity, who owns mistakes, and who lifts others up? We know that trust takes time to build and can be lost in a moment. But the good news is trust can always be rebuilt when we lead with clear intent and strong integrity, and when we practice these trust-building behaviors consistently. Before we close out, I just want to say thank you for listening. This episode that ends with Lonnie's interview is going to be a very uplifting one. Also, we have a resource that we try to include. We're trying to figure out ways to add value in everything we do. And so there's a resource that you can click within the app notes or the podcast notes that you can get and dive into this work with yourself and with people around you. Ultimately, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for joining me today. Thank you for being courageous to look in the mirror and remember that change starts with us first. It starts with the way we lead, the way we communicate, and the way we show up for our teams. So let's get out there and let's lead with trust. Welcome, Lonnie Moore. I can't thank you enough. I know we are great friends outside of this, but I just want to say for like the umpteenth time, I can't thank you enough for having courage to live in this trust space long ago when you wrote your book about the high trust classroom. It's something that, as I've shared with you many times, but I'm not sure if the audience knows, my wife's exposure to that book is one of the pieces that helped her encourage me to really explore a career in education about 13, 14 years ago. And it has changed my life in so many ways. And so we're friends. So obviously, you know, I love you, but most importantly, like that courage to put yourself out there, put your thoughts out there, particularly around the subject of trust has been life-changing for me. So one, thank you and welcome.
Yeah. Dustin, thanks a lot, man. You know, every time you share that story with me, and, you know, I always think about the butterfly effect because you just never know, right? You never know how something that you decide to do. And all of this came from just one day when a principal of mine, back when I was a classroom teacher, simply said to me, Lonnie, I don't know how you do what you do in the classroom, but could you just like write that down someday so we can give it to other people? And I said, look, I don't even know how I do what I do. It was just like such an innate thing. And then he really challenged me over a period of time to just try to jot it down. And I did. And it ended up in this book. And look, here we both are today.
Yeah. So, I mean, Lonnie, first off, you've been an educator, an author, one of the most transformative consultants that we've had here at Franklin Covey, not just education, mm-hmm. but in general. And now you lead so many other folks. You're a senior leader in our organization. And so I'm just curious, like when you think about the many schools and districts you've worked with and your journey throughout education, why is trust such a foundational element and like an educational leadership, or how does it impact the culture? I'm just curious. I mean, you wrote a book on trust early here. Why is trust so foundational from all of your experiences?
Yeah. You know, Stephen M. R. says it, right? Trust, the one thing that changes everything. And it is the one thing that changes everything. And, you know, having been a consultant here at Franklin Covey now for, 25 years, Dustin, it's crazy. And just having gone literally been into, I don't know, probably 2,500 different schools over the years, just walking in a building, you can feel it. You know, you just feel it. It's different when you walk in a building, even on a Zoom call sometimes with a school, you can feel it. It just feels different when you're in a high trust culture, and you can feel that high trust culture almost from the moment you walk in the front office. And so, you know, you've been in so many, but you know, when you walk in there, you can feel it.
Yeah. So, you know, as this conversation, we could go a lot of different places. As you know, this episode is particularly focused on the character piece of building trust. And one of the key pieces that Stephen talks about is intent as being a motive behind our actions. And so I'm curious, how do leaders, or how do you coach leaders in education to clarify and communicate their intent in a way that builds trust among teachers, among students, and among parents?
Yeah, it really does come out of their behaviors right from the very beginning. The behaviors that they're modeling every day, you know, we talk about the waves of trust and how trust starts with self-trust and then moves into relationship trust. But sometimes you're around a leader and it's like, gosh, I don't even think they trust their own self. And so how's that possible? How's it possible for them to build a culture of trust when they may not even be able to trust their own self? So it really does start with modeling, and you pick it up from people right from the beginning, don't you?
Yeah, but like I think you said something that I want to harp on is,
yeah,
there are folks, let's assume the best intent in folks, right? So there are folks who have either struggled to create trust or have done something to hurt trust. And one of the hardest, most vulnerable places I think to be as a leader is when you know you've done that or haven't created the trust and you're trying to figure out how to get it back. How have you experienced that? Are there any stories that you've experienced along the way? And what encouragement do you have for leaders that are kind of in that space of, I've got to try to earn this back?
Yeah. You know, Dustin, I'm very fortunate. For the past, gosh, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, I've reported directly to Sean Covey. And Sean just models our content so well. And he has got something that he just continues to just repeat to us. Whenever you have a problem with somebody, whenever you feel like somebody has had their feelings hurt, or there's been a misunderstanding, or there's some sort of internal conflict or drama, don't talk about them. Don't go to other people. Don't send them an email. Either call them on the phone or go directly to them face to face. And we just call this in the 13 behaviors, confronting reality. You have to confront reality. And I think that is a very, very big thing that great leaders do. They don't shove it under the rug. They go right to the person as soon as they know it's happened. And they just say, listen, I'm hearing some things and I'm feeling some things. Could I just come right to you, and you and I just, let's just close the door. Let's just create an environment. There's no TV on. There's no background noise. It's just you and me. Can we clarify this?
So I love that. I think so. That's like the main piece. How do we pull you aside and just have the courageous conversation, right? Yeah. I think also, particularly in education, and I'm going to assume, again, it's coming from a good place. Yeah. One of the trust behaviors we're talking about in this episode, as you know, is talking straight. And so in that, so you create this courageous conversation, but you have to talk straight in it to get real impact. So what's your advice to telling people why talking straight is so important and helping them kind of get over the first hump of really talking straight, not just kind of talking around an issue?
Yeah, right. You know, you're right. And high trust behavior number one is talk straight. And I think sometimes just the words talk straight are sometimes misinterpreted, because talk straight, come on, we gonna talk, right? And it can almost kind of be intimidating a little bit. But if you go to trust behavior number two, which is to demonstrate respect. So how can you talk straight in a very, very gentle, respectful way? Somebody told me a long time ago, have an iron hand, but wear a velvet glove. And I love that, because that's what we have to do. And you really do have to talk straight and truly create that transparency to where you can have that respectful conversation, you know, not to jump us over back into the habits, right? So, but we all know, no habit one, right? Be proactive, not reactive. And some people, when it comes to talking straight and having that conversation when it's needed, they get all puffed up, right? And they come in and they're ready to be reactive. And how do we create that environment to where we can have that conversation without it turning reactive? And really the way to do that is weeks and months and years before. We talk about having deposits into the emotional bank account. You know, Dustin, you and I, our EBA is so high with each other. If I ever did anything that made you angry, you could just come to me and say, dude, you know, and it's not even a big deal. But if we had a low EBA, oh, that would be awful for you and I to have that conversation.
Yeah. I think, you know, talking about EBAs, so righting wrongs, right? So if I hurt you, that happens in real relationships. I don't care how close we are. At some point, I know I have done something either intentionally or accidentally to hurt trust. And so, you know, one of the powerful behaviors we talk about is righting wrongs. Could you share an example or some examples of how you've seen leaders, I don't know, own their mistakes or missteps and how that has transformed their culture and their organization?
Boy, I think of it in a student context. And I'll just share a quick little story around this. There was a middle school that I was working with in Kansas City. This was, gosh, probably 7 or 8 years ago. And there was a boy in there named Josh. He was in the 8th grade. He was supposed to be in the 9th grade. And the principal told me that he always kind of came down on this kid a lot. You know, he was kind of a fear and intimidation, right? That great quote, fear and intimidation yields temporary compliance. And so he was this principal that was a fear and intimidation guy. And he was using fear and intimidation with Josh. And then when he went through the 7 habits training, he decided he was going to take a little bit of a different approach, right? Because we always use we always say, what is it that adults are currently doing that students could do? And he said, well, maybe this kid, Josh, maybe I could give him a leadership role. And they said, well, what's Josh good at? Well, he was a year older than he should have been. His voice had already changed. He kind of had this man voice. And somebody said, you know what? Let's put him on the announcements. And everybody was like, no way, you're going to put Josh on the announcements. And they put Josh on the announcements. And this kid was amazing. Nobody had an idea that he could just take a piece of paper and just do a cold read. He could do nobody knew this kid could do this. And he became the morning announcement guy and just transformed over time. In fact, at one point, Josh's mom came to school and says, what have you done to my kid? He was sick today, but he said, I've got to go to school because I got to do the morning announcements. This kid, Josh's life was transformed because the principal had a paradigm shift on seeing Josh differently. So when we talk about righting wrongs, oh my gosh, the wrong was his paradigm of how he saw Josh. And now suddenly he sees him differently. And look at what happened. Josh's life was probably, I need to find out where that kid is today. He's probably 25 years old now.
I love where you went with that as the paradigm of first looking in the mirror, right? So instead of saying, I need to fix that, it's how do I model differently and think differently? What kind of encouragement? I mean, you've forgotten more than I even know about our 7 habits and speed of trust content. When I say something like building off of your story, which is this mm-hmm. principle, examine their paradigms, looked in the mirror, yeah. said, I got to do differently and I got different results. What encouragement do you have for people to take that first step or to start building that habit in themselves that every time there's a challenge, they look inside first and then they lead?
It's so hard, isn't it? We get caught up in the whirlwind of being an educator and I'm speaking to myself, Dustin, as much as anybody, because the longer that we do this, you know, sometimes we forget and we have to step back and simply ask yourself, why are you doing this? What is your why? You know, and the why, every single time I have to force myself into that little exercise, the why is always the kids. And sometimes I get stuck, you know, I haven't been to a school where I've worked directly with kids. And then I get right in front of these kids, whether these kids are 5th graders or 12th graders. I look in their eyes and I see pain. I see hope. I see need. I see all of these things in the kids. And so I would just encourage everybody to stay inspired by staying connected to your why and just think about how much these kids need you, need us today.
Yeah. I mean, Lonnie, I anybody listening now just can tell your passion and infectious leadership style. And so I could talk to you all day. I'm going to go to the last 2 questions just to honor these quick tidbits. And I'm going to work with Caitlin to figure out how to get you back on more frequently with me. So the last 2 questions is, can you share you started to there. When you think about helping leaders build trust, particularly with intent and integrity, what are some strategies or tools that you have teached or encouraged folks to take some early steps of how you build, you know, like I said, trust through intent and integrity specifically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think it comes back to people's mission And it's funny, we talk about trust, and it's hard for me to talk about trust without going right back to Private Victory. And we mentioned habit one a little bit earlier, but I think if we go right back into habit number two and ask what is your mission, you know, and because your mission, when you're really walking and living in alignment with your own personal mission statement, then that is what's going to help you with, you know, what we would call private victory, but we might also call integrity, right? Character. Some people would use those words associated with it, but Stephen would certainly talk about having private victories precede public victories. There is absolutely no doubt about it. You can't love another until you love yourself. So everything starts with self, and that is truly living in balance with your vision, mission, and goals and values.
God, you're the worst. I actually think that may be my next question that you've already answered because that was powerful, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I'm sure you've got plenty of nuggets in there. You know, as kind of we wrap up, what's one piece of advice you would give a school or a district leader who are working on trying to rebuild or just more strongly build a culture of trust?
So if we're talking about a culture, so now we're talking about more than with just one person. We're talking about an entire culture in a school. And we just know we're going to have to pour a lot of EBA deposits culturally. They need to, our staff needs to see that. I often think about like a new principal that comes into a new culture and they don't even know who this new principal is, new leadership. And how can we do it? I mean, some of the very concrete things, I mean, yeah, I can tell you the same things we talked about earlier. Like, okay, let's model, let's be consistent. Let's do all of those things. Let's show them love and care and be there and work hard and all of those things. But I think sometimes it's, I think a good retreat. I know that sounds kind of cliche, but hey, let's all go to the mountaintop and sit around the campfire for 2 days and just talk and tell stories. And sometimes if you can kind of create that type of a culture or that type of an event, then it really does help build the culture. We go to so many schools. I mean, I was in a school last week. They have 2,700 kids in the school. There are teachers there that don't even know teachers on the other side of the campus. So what kind of culture is that? So I really loved creating events, and it's so hard these days. Professional development time is almost like non-existent, but how do we create these moments? I was with a school in August, they were going bowling together. I think there has to be things like this. I mean, potluck lunches, you know, doing things, there has to be something to create that family to create potential high trust experiences.
Yeah, I love that. I think my wife just modeled that with taking her team to a cabin for a couple of days. And just, I mean, again, they can have the same meetings, you know, and talk to our boy William about that. They can have our same meetings in their office, or they can go off and actually fellowship, break bread in the midst of having those meetings, and the trust that's created, the open dialogue and honesty that's created is so much more powerful. And again, you've been doing this, you said, for 25 years, and you're the first thing you said, go figure out a retreat, do something, break the monotony, have bowling, have potlucks, whatever, but you've got to connect. You've got to have that outside the normal operating procedures connectivity to really gel. Is that what I'm hearing?
Hey, create moments.
Create moments.
We have to create moments. They're going to happen organically, but sometimes we have to make them. Create moments.
Well, Lonnie Moore, I love you, sir. I cannot thank you enough for making time to be here, especially given the crazy amount of demand it is put on your time currently. I don't think anybody, when I say that, I think people are like, ha ha, yeah. But the amount of places that you need to go across, maybe not just this country, but other countries, is crazy to me. So anytime I can get you, and it appears to be in your office, so I'm hopeful that you're not traveling right now. That's crazy. And just thank you, man. I thank you. Like I said at the beginning of this, I wouldn't be here. I know that's crazy to say, but I mean that. You played a huge part of me being able to come here, and I can't thank you enough. And I'm just inspired by you and your work. And thanks for making time for us today.
My pleasure, Dustin. Hey, anytime. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, Lonnie.